possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters like you and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, oh yes, vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week, with live music on Wednesday, that's tonight, Thursday, and Saturday. They're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also made possible by the locally owned and operated Rescue Technology Solutions, providing on-site and remote computer repair, maintenance, and security, serving all of Northern California since 2002. Rescue Technology Solutions offers on-site and remote support, monthly maintenance services, PC repair, and virus removal. For more information, visit rescuetech.net, that's RESQTECH.net, or call them at 888-817-2667. This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. To the February 14th, 2018 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about zoos and the false hope of captivity they bring. A story of hope without captivity, featuring the beloved panda. And then, because it's the Winter Olympics, we're going to talk about past and present vegan Olympians. Jeannie, take it away.
Thanks, Danny. In an article posted in November 2017 on the One Green Planet website, reporter Corrine Henn wrote about the topic of so-called surplus zoo animals, a topic that I got interested in after we had local animal advocates and wildlife biologists Don Garcia and Joe Arroyo on the show in January to talk about H.R. 1818, the Big Cat Public Safety Act, which then we went on to talk about the whole lion and tiger cub selfie pay photo business. So that brought up the issue of, like, where do these cubs come from? So this piece by Corrine Henn sheds a little more light on the mechanics of how and why zoos control the breeding of captive animals on display. So starting from the beginning, when we capture animals from the wild and put them in zoos, the animals become commodities for the zoos. The animals are stripped of their ability to display natural behaviors, and they lead a stilted existence filled with stress and boredom. Because the harm that life in captivity does to zoo animals, both mentally and physically, many zoos run captive breeding programs. As such, zoos can sustain their captive animal populations, and more importantly, the draw of a new baby animal is a great way to get paying visitors in their doors or on their websites. The downside to captive breeding is the occurrence of what are known as surplus animals. We're speaking here specifically of surplus animals found in the zoo environment. However, surplus animals are just as easily disposable when they're coming from the pet trade, from circuses, and other roadside attractions. These animals can be adult animals who have been bred with a number of mates and are no longer needed to produce offspring for the zoo. Basically, any animal that doesn't fit into the zoo's breeding program can be considered a surplus. And surplus animals can also be animals that the zoo no longer finds profitable, such as the cubs that were a big hit the year before might be replaced by newer, younger animals. Since zoos are not responsible for lifetime care of animals, they can get rid of the animals who are no longer profitable or useful. And many zoos have what are called species survival plans. We talked about this a little bit with the biologists, Don Garcia and Joe Arroyo. And these are plans in place that are designed to manage populations and keep them genetically diverse. And although these plans are often formed years in advance, there's no way to completely control how many surplus animals there may be within the plan, right? So if there's too many animals from one genetic lineage, that would be considered a surplus animal. And of course, zoo animals are often given names. You'll find their names on small plaques displayed in front of the exhibit, along with a short history, an overview, or a few key personality traits for visitors to read and feel like they're getting to know the animal. Anthropomorphizing these animals in this way with a name allows the public to feel connected to them.
It also encourages the public to give the zoo money.
After all, we have our favorite animals. But the bottom line is the animals are expendable. Breeding programs are set in place to benefit the population as a whole. That's what a species survival plan is. And it's really not regarding the value or right to life of an individual. Most institutions in the United States that are accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, also known as the AZA, would dispute these claims that they don't care for their animals. But one can't help but question an institution's motives when, upon further investigation, the business transactions that often take place are questionable or opaque, right? These surplus animals, which are commonly excess big cats like lions and tigers, are often sold and traded through an online database. The AZA Animal Exchange is a database that serves the United States, Argentina, the Bahamas, Bermuda, Colombia, Hong Kong, Mexico, and Singapore. These are all members of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which is a U.S.-dominated network. There's a separate one for Europe. It's the EAZA, and there's a separate one for Asia.
You know, I mean, just to jump in here, and I think you're going to get to this, not all zoos claim they're practicing conservation, but many do, or many people think they are.
That's true. Like, even if the zoo makes no claim
right.
on that. We will fill in the gap.
Right. And yet there's an entire market and exchange for selling surplus zoo animals. I mean, that's pretty a big thing to have an entire market and software and a process for selling and buying and selling and trading these animals. It has very little at that point to do with conservation or getting these animals. Keeping them alive or getting them back out into the wild, obviously.
I think these transactions are often without money involved. They're just trading animal for animal. And then the receiving institution pays for the transportation. A crane hen does not get into that aspect of it. That's just an aside there. Anyway, the database is password protected, so you have to, you know, have the keys to get in to be able to view this. And it's limited to AZA accredited institutions, certified related facilities, and approved non-member participants are able to access this database. And although zoos frequently promote conservation of endangered species through their mission statements, animal welfare often takes a backseat when the monetary value of a particular animal is no longer worth the time and energy the zoo is investing in them. Unless you're someone who has a zoo membership and visits a lot during the year, animal trading and these kinds of transactions are usually overlooked because the ordinary public doesn't notice when an animal goes off display.
Right.
Or is replaced.
I wonder how many of those carefully labeled cages with names, you know, if they swap out the animal or not.
You know? Right. That's why it's harder for the big elephants. This is an aside. This is not in the article. This is why it's harder as an when the animals really get to be known as individuals, such as elephants, where there's only a few. That's why it's really hard for them to be trading elephants around. So anyway, as a seemingly reputable source, right, we trust zoos in general. We
We don't, but society does.
Society does. Zoos maintain that they only deal and broker with institutions that are accredited by the AZA that value the welfare of the animal. Throughout the years, however, many claims have been made against a number of institutions that have sold animals, whether directly or indirectly, to individuals or establishments that do not have the animal's best interest in mind. Some animals are sold directly to game reserves, while others are brought to auction. The paper trail following where these animals go is not always easily accessible, and in most cases, exposing these transactions have been through undercover work. According to Ellen Green, who is the author of the book Animal Underworld, who did just such undercover investigation, he investigated the underground economy of those institutions who trade in rare and exotic creatures, including American zoos and amusement parks that dump their surplus animals on middlemen who secretly redirect these animals into private hands. Ellen Green wrote in his book, Animal Underworld, quote, "It's a long-standing, nod-and-a-wink arrangement meant to provide the zoo's deniability. They hand over their unwanted animals and hope that the dealer's misdeeds aren't traced back to the sources. It's a sorry game of don't ask, don't tell, and it's conducted in a way designed to bury the truth. If these publicly funded institutions have nothing to hide, why won't they provide a full accounting of where all the unwanted animals went?" End quote.
Right.
Yeah, the opacity of generally animal agriculture is...
there's always a middleman.
Is a hallmark of it, right?
I mean, even outside of the zoo industry here, I know this goes on with a lot of just animal buying and selling, and we do it all the right way. We just trade with this guy, and the middleman's like, well, we just trade with that guy, and then we don't know what happens.
We'll do an upcoming show. This week is also the Westminster Kennel Club show, the premier dog competition, fancy dog competition in the United States. We'll do another show about that. But the same principle applies in terms of puppy mill breeders and middlemen and people trusting where they get their animals from. Corinne Henn went on to interview and speak with Carol Baskin, who's the founder of Big Cat Rescue, which is a nonprofit that rescues lions, leopards, and tigers. And Carol Baskin said, if the animals are lucky, they may be traded or sent to another zoo or accredited facility. Some get transferred to multiple zoos throughout their lives, but a large number of them go to private breeders, pet owners, circuses, roadside zoos, and canned hunting ranches, end quote. So what happens is once the animals are sold to other owners, the people who purchase them can do whatever they please with the animals.
Yep.
Baskin from Big Cat Rescue asserts that this often ends with the animals being sold to taxidermists, or the seller will take the animals to auction where anyone can buy them. So at some point, money becomes part of this system. It may not start at the zoo-to-zoo transfer, but at some point when these animals get into these middlemen brokers, that's when money starts to be an issue. Given the loose regulations surrounding purchasing exotic animals in the United States, the animals can be traded far and with little thought or concern. If animals are not being traded out, another option that zoos consider is euthanasia. In the U.S., zoos favor the use of contraception to limit the number of unwanted pregnancies amongst animals. And even with that, they still generate excess tigers and lions and bears. Oh, my. But in Europe, killing surplus animals is standard practice because they feel, in an article in The New Yorker about Danish zoos, the zoo director there feels that allowing animals to court and mate and get pregnant and have babies is helping them be more natural in this captive environment. In 2016, the world cried for an 18-month-old giraffe named Marius, who was shot and killed at the Copenhagen Zoo, because, as zoo officials stated, his genes were already well represented enough amongst the remaining giraffe populations. Despite breeding programs set in place meant to maintain genetic diversity, Marius was born. The Copenhagen Zoo scientists performed an autopsy on Marius in front of onlookers, all in the name of education. A few weeks later, four lions were killed in the same fashion at the Copenhagen Zoo because officials had hoped to introduce a new male with the remaining breeding females.
And I keep, you know, are lions endangered or are they not? And if they are, why can't these animals be put back in the wild? And if they are keeping lions and not setting them up to be reintegrated into the wild, then what exactly is going on?
Right, right. I mean, what zoos claim to do is first education and a close second is conservation. Or maybe they may flip those two and say conservation is their primary goal. And yet the ability to rewild these captive-raised big predators is zero.
Right.
So, anyway, so these acts of what they call euthanasia are not justifiable. Although the euthanasia of healthy animals is inherently cruel, trading or loaning animals can sometimes lead animals to the same sad fate or worse, right? If the quality of life of each individual animal was as important as accredited zoo institutions claim, they would ensure the survival of the animal, each animal, to the best of their capabilities and knowledge, and acknowledge the role and responsibility that they have to care for the animals they breed for life. And the reality is, these animals don't need to be in zoos. We humans put them there, let's face it, for our entertainment. Very few of the zoos who claim to keep and breed animals for the purpose of conservation actually achieve conservation. And if they did, there would not be surplus animals because those animals would be part of on the road to being put out in the wild.
Yeah. If zoos weren't taking money in from the public, they would run them far differently.
Yes, but there's that too.
Their very design, it incentivizes the whole system, to be literally a dog and pony show, because the more interesting things you do, the more baby animals, the more money you bring in. If you're relying on, a government grant for a specific purpose, then that's it. You're gonna work towards that goal, because there's not going to be a windfall of money if you have an exceptionally interesting animal to show people.
Okay, so that was an article from November 2017 on the One Green Planet website by reporter Corrine Henn on the topic of so-called surplus zoo animals. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. What do we have next, Danny?
Next, we have an article from the December 21st, 2017 issue of the National Post, where reporter Tristan Hopper wrote about pandas in an article titled, "Why Captive Pandas Are an Utterly Garbage Symbol for Global Conservation."
No, say it isn't so.
The modern usage of garbage. Hopper opened his essay referring to a television broadcast in 2009 where BBC presenter Chris Packham infamously said that the panda, the cuddly teddy bear-like symbol of the world conservation movement, should be left to die. Quote, "Let them go with a degree of dignity," Packham said. Since the mid-1970s, zoos around the world have spent untold millions of dollars on programs to keep the panda on life support through captive breeding. Packham figured the planet would be better off if we simply pulled the plug and directed all that panda money towards something else. But it turns out you can agree with Packham without also dooming everyone's favorite herbivorous bear. Reporter Tristan Hopper reports that the panda is finally being saved, and it has almost nothing to do with the wasteful, largely pointless Chinese propaganda enterprise that's taking place at your local zoo. Despite decades of captive breeding, only 9 captive bred pandas have ever been released back into the wild. That's not a good success rate. I would get fired from my job if I had, a success rate like that.
And the poor guys who did get re-released, they did not live long.
Right.
At least half of them died within the first year.
Yikes. Meanwhile, the majority of the world's 300-plus captive pandas will die without a glimpse of their mountainous home, as will their children and all their descendants, because they're never going to be released. Mark Beckoff, an ethologist. What does that word mean?
It's an animal behaviorist.
An ethologist, also known as an animal behaviorist, at the University of Colorado Boulder told National Geographic in 2013 that, quote, "These programs have been going on long enough that we should see more progress made. It's almost like breed and pray that something works out." Reporter Tristan Hopper goes on to write that in 2012, the government of then Prime Minister Stephen Harper announced a 10-year deal with the Chinese government that would bring 2 pandas to zoos in Calgary and Toronto. As well as with all of China's panda deals, the agreement was cloaked in the veil of science. The Toronto Zoo, the animal's current home, still notes that they are there thanks to a conservation partnership agreement. However, China has political reasons to maintain its international network of the black and white bears. every single captive panda around the world is owned by the People's Republic of China. I bet you didn't know that. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, they're basically leased out.
Yeah. And countries don't get one unless the Chinese Communist Party considers them a friend or wants something from them. In Canada's case, the cost of friendship was a $3 billion in trade deals, as well as a personal visit by Harper.
$3 billion with a B.
Yeah.
These are valuable bears.
Yeah, I mean, every time something's going on with a panda, right, it's on, like, it's on NBC, it's on the news. Oh, there might be a baby. Somebody just got a new panda. So, you know, I can see politicians doing the trade-off for that. It's no wonder, then, that pandas hold the Guinness World Record for the most expensive zoo species, with the animals costing as much as 5 times more than elephants, the second most expensive species. Much of this cost is due to the loan fees charged by China. This does not mean that the effort to save the panda is stalled. Far from it. In fact, panda populations have grown by more than 14% since 2004. How, you wonder why? Let's see. Pandas have been rebounding thanks to two relatively obvious conservation strategies. China has stopped bulldozing their habitat, and poachers have stopped killing them. So that's, you know, that seems like the first order of thing, right, to work on. The Chinese government banned logging in panda habitat in the 1990s and has since been demarcating giant panda reserves as well as wildlife corridors to link the reserves together. Unlike their listless captive counterparts, who famously refuse to mate despite mood music, Viagra, or even, quote, panda pornography, wild pandas are fantastic breeders. In 2016, the species was officially taken off the endangered list. No animal in history has sucked up more conservation dollars than the giant panda. Literal fortunes have been spent on quixotic programs to maintain a perpetually captive class of pandas, all under the banner of conservation. It really turns out that all they needed was to be left alone. So,
right. So that's like, this is where the conservation meets its functionality. Right.
Right.
It's, you can spend millions of dollars keeping animals somewhat happy, more or less unhappy in a captive situation, but all you're doing is preserving them within a captive situation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can literally take that conservation money and pay poachers to do something else, and I think they do that in some parts of the world. But, you know, the money that has gone into all that versus, well, let's stop logging their territory and stop poaching them, you know, you could probably look at the cost of all that and figure out which one's cheaper.
And you can look at the overall number types of animals that are in zoos, and not all of them are even endangered.
Right.
Right. So you're keeping an animal that's doing well or doing okay and spending money on it.
Yeah.
Keeping it alive and reproducing in a captive situation.
Right. For education purposes, because nobody's got a TV to you know, see a deer on.
Like there isn't something like the Animal Planet or National Geographic on television.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks, Danny. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. Our next story, it's the 2018 Winter Games in Pyeongchang. They're underway, and to get you in the spirit, Mercy for Animals highlighted one awesome vegan Olympian, and I want to draw your attention to her. That is Megan Duhamel. She's a Canadian pairs figure skater. She won silver in the 2014 Sochi Olympics in pairs figure skating, and she is she's been vegan since 2008. And she told Huffington Post Canada, "I thought I was just going to go vegan until the 2010 Olympics, but since I didn't go to the Olympics, I ended up liking it so much, I decided to be vegan for the rest of my life." Well, Duhamel and her partner Eric Redford landed themselves a gold medal in pairs figure skating earlier this week at this year's Winter Olympics. And they're still on to compete in the short program, and I wish them luck. Her skating partner, Eric Radford, is also the first openly gay man to win a gold medal in the Winter Olympics. So it's like, well done. Megan Duhamel adopted a dog in South Korea when she was there in 2017. And that dog, which is a little 2-year-old miniature dachshund named Muti, was adopted through a group called Free Korean Dogs, which is fighting the dog meat trade in Korea, where they eat dogs. And for the 2018 Olympics, she will be taking home not only a gold medal, but she'll be taking home and helping transport a second Korean rescue dog who'll be adopted to a family in Canada when she gets back on the ground. And you can follow Megan Duhamel at her blog, Lutz of Greens, and Lutz is, of course, a play on a figure skating leap. So that is all I want to say about the Winter Olympics. Just go, Megan. And there are other vegan Olympians, too, and we talked about them in the past.
Go, Megan. And I like the pun.
This is Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio.
All right. Now it is time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Get out your pens and your bits of charcoal and chalk, and however you like to write, so that you can mark up your calendars.
Thank you, Danny. There are some great events to put on your calendar coming up. If you need more info, you can go ahead and send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. And I just want to give a shout out on this Valentine's Day. Happy second anniversary to Ohm Foods, which is celebrating 2 years in business and will be moving into downtown Chico at some point in the coming weeks. This Saturday, February 17th, the Cooking for Compassion and Health Exploring Indian Cuisine cooking class is going on. If you love Indian food but feel that it's too complicated to make at home, the Cooking for Compassion and Health Indian Cuisine class is for you. The class will show you how to prepare a full Indian meal, including a dal, which is a bean-based spicy soup, how to prepare Indian-style vegetables, a curry, rice, flatbread, and chutney. This class is organized by the Chico Chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals, and we'll be in the first of 4 classes this year exploring Indian cuisine. There is still room in this class, and you can register at brownpapertickets.com or through the event tab at Non-Human Radio. And that will be this Saturday, February 17th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Sky Creek Dharma Center. And this weekend coming up is the 5th Animal Film Festival, also on February 17th in Grass Valley. CAPE is hosting the 5th Annual Animal Film Festival at the Center for the Arts in Grass Valley. The all-day event will feature 30 short films about animals and the issues they face around the world. And that will be Saturday, February 17th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And you can buy tickets at the Center for Performing Arts, Center for the Arts in Grass Valley, at their website. And coming up on February 22nd is the Plant-Based Chico Monthly Meeting, hosted by Plant-Based Chico. That'll be Thursday, February 22nd from 6 to 9 p.m. Plant-Based Chico meets on the last Thursday of the month at the Chico Guild Hall, and will feature speakers, videos, and giveaways. Organizer Nancy Norby Matthews puts together a program to support people transitioning to a whole foods plant-based diet. And that is it for the calendar. If you have an event to share, send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. And we have one last piece of business to take care of, and that is the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Take it away, Danny.
The Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from Dr. Doolittle by Hugh Lofting. If I had my way, there wouldn't be a single lion or tiger in captivity anywhere in the world. They never take to it. They're never happy. They never settle down. You can see it in their eyes. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Thanks to Guillermo Mash and Sue Hildebrand for their engineering assistance and moral support.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff.
We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who would rather not be killed and eaten, hunted, raced, put in zoos, experimented upon, and otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against.
This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.